For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the July 27th, 2024 edition of the Founders Pod. I am DM3, one of the co-founders, alongside my brother, A. Rich, Akeem Richens. A. Rich, we're almost to August, man. We got football. How you feeling?
A. Rich, Akeem Richens. If you don't know us by now, if you don't know Built in Buffalo by now, please get to know us. DM3, I'm excited, man, because it's The life and summers are not the same when our Buffalo Bills are not present. And now that is starting to come back around, I'm getting excited. I'm getting pumped, man. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm good, man. Happy birthday to Brandon Bean, best general manager in the NFL. And happy birthday to the best nickel corner, Taron Johnson. I'm good, man. I'm good. Hey, you know what happens on Monday?
What happens on Monday, DM3?
Pants, come on.
Can't wait. I can't wait for that.
I'm excited and nervous at the same time because yes, they've had 91 guys all 3 days. No injuries so far. We've seen a couple, like Chase Claypool, something happened, but he came back to practice. I know Cam Lewis was out for a little bit, but it looked like he came back and he was fine. So I'm excited. I'm nervous and excited at the same time because, like, it's getting real. Like, we're getting real. We have a loaded show. We're going to talk about Joe Brady's offense. I think there's still guys in motion, even though practice is over. We're going to talk about Keon Coleman. We're going to talk about Matt Milano. We're going to talk about Damar Hamlin, which I want to talk about because we touched on it a couple weeks ago, but I really want to talk about him. The wide receiver position seems like there is a new pass catcher emerging every day from the group that the Bills have. And then Akeem and myself, we're going to end the show with some hot takes. As always, A. Rich, where do you want to start first?
Why not start the show off with a little curveball, right? You spoke about Damar Hamlin a couple of weeks ago. He had some first-team reps in these training camp practices. Let's kick it off with Damar Hamlin in that safety position.
Let me ask you a question real quick. Did it surprise you that the first day of training camp that Damar Hamlin was running alongside Taylor Rapp as with starting safety? That surprised you at all?
Actually, it did. I was rather surprised to see Damar Hamlin getting those reps, especially with the acquisition in the draft pick, high draft pick of Cole Bishop. So to see Damar Hamlin take those first team reps, I was surprised, but it was a pleasant surprise.
Because we saw that Mike Edwards was getting reps the second day with Taylor Rapp. The constant here has been Taylor Rapp. It seems like all 3 days he's been getting most of the run with the ones. Cole Bishop on day three was the third guy up, I guess, in that rotation with Taylor Rapp. Mm-hmm. So this is going to kind of go off a little bit. And then we'll circle back to Damar Hamlin. Uh-huh. Do you think that there's going to be different treatment for Cole Bishop and Keon Coleman based off of expectations, things like that? Because I feel like we've seen Keon Coleman, and we'll talk about him in a bit, but we've seen him making a lot of plays, and it seems like he's getting a lot of love from Josh Allen early in all 3 days of camp. And Cole Bishop, we haven't heard much about. Minicamp, he was obviously here. And then now it seems like he, on day three, was getting some of the snaps. Is this something where you think they're just going to kind of have to bring him along slowly? Is it a different progress level or progression level for the two because they're two different positions? What's your thoughts, and does that mean anything about the position groups stacked against each other, the safety groups against the wide receivers? Because we know there's a slew of guys at wide receiver, and then we have this new group at safety. Does it worry you at all that Cole Bishop is kind of being brought along a little bit slower than maybe we had liked?
No, not at all. I think it's still relatively early. We have veterans that is trying to pick up the system as well. We have a guy in Mike Edwards who came over from the Chiefs and I believe the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He's on his third team in 3 years. He's trying to pick up the system along with, you know, guys like DeMar Hamlin and Taylor Rapp, because even though the coaching staff is the same and it's relatively the same from last year, you know, there's different components within the coaching tree. Now we have Bobby Babish as the defensive coordinator, and his expectations may be different than the expectations of a Joe Brady and how he liked to run his receiving corps. So at the end of the day, I think both Keon Coleman and Cole Bishop will play significant snaps this season. I just think that the tutelage will be different on how they're brought up to speed.
You think you mentioned Bobby Babbage. Do you think it has something to do with Brady, even though it was only half a season last year, he was here last year calling plays. So that might be a difference there, although it is a new player in Keon Coleman. And now Bobby Babbage, I'm assuming Bobby Babbage is going to call plays. I don't know how you would go into this season and have McDermott calling him, and then at what point would you relinquish it to Bobby Babbage? I think it would have to be the other way around. You know what I'm saying? Like, if something wasn't going right, then you revert back to Sean McDermott taking over calling plays. But back to DeMar Hamlin, people forget that he had 100 tackles not too long ago. You know, when he filled in for Micah Hyde, he was playing at a really good level back there with Jordan Poyer. People forget about that. And people forget about DeMar Hamlin as the football player. Obviously, we know what happened to him in Cincinnati on that Monday Night Football game. So what are your expectations? Because I think a lot of us had DeMar Hamlin as a bubble guy. I know early on, I thought that there was I'll preface that by saying after watching how he wasn't utilized last year, unless you want to call that fake punt or whatever that was that they tried to do with him. He wasn't really utilized much other than special teams. So I think a lot of people were kind of sleeping on the fact that DeMar Hamlin knows the system. He knows Sean McDermott. He knows Bobby Babbage because he was in the safety room when Bobby Babbage was the DB's coach. So are you – I mean, you said, yes, you were a little surprised, but do you think he can actually work towards being a starting safety, honestly?
starting safety, I'm not there yet. With DeMar Hamlin as a starting safety, I do think right now I see his ceiling potential. If he's playing the way I think he's capable of playing, is being a valuable rotational piece to the Buffalo Bills defensive puzzle. And I think part of why he took first team snaps and part of why Cole Bishop was brought on slowly is because of, think about Sean McDermott and his defense, right? He even alluded to it the other day. What are the three positions on his defense that is difficult on all three levels? He named edge as one.
Right.
He named middle linebacker, the quarterback on defense, as the other. And the last one he named that's a important piece is the safety position as well. So being that he listed those positions as an important piece to the puzzle, it now, in my opinion, makes sense to me, right? Terrell Bernard, he wasn't a starter right away. He was on the Buffalo Bills bench for a year before he took over. And now we're seeing the slow progression with Cole Bishop. But getting to DeMar Hamlin, I definitely think he can be a key rotational piece to the Buffalo Bills defense. Before his injury, he was on a upward trajectory. Right. He was sound against the run. His coverage was a little sporadic, but he was a capable player and he was a capable defender. And that injury happened, or that his accident happened, I think that slowed down his progression and his process a little bit, right? Last year was more about mentally believing that you can play in this NFL after the accident that you've had. And I think this offseason, being healthy, he gets to work on his game, work on some weaknesses that he have, get in the weight room and work out with his trainers or position coaches in hopes to pick up where he left off a couple of years ago when he had that trajectory on the rise. And I think that with a healthy offseason, we can see a lot of surprises from a Damar Hamlin that I think a lot of us fans quickly wrote off as a rotational depth piece.
You think it makes a difference that he was that season he played when Micah Hyde was injured? Do you think it makes a difference that he was playing with Jordan Poyer and now it's Taylor Rapp? I mean, we all like Taylor Rapp, and we think that when they signed him last year, it was kind of a tryout to see if he could be something long term. But I don't think Taylor Rapp is Jordan Poyer yet. He's not yet. Mm-hmm. Not saying he can't be, but he did have Jordan Poyer back there as kind of that, you know, that partner in crime that would put him in positions at times to be successful. So I think it's going to be really interesting. I have been concerned about the safety position since before the league year even started. I was concerned about what the Bills were going to do with the safety position, drafting, free agency wise. Because we all knew that Poyer and Hyde, especially when Poyer got released, that we were concerned about what was going to happen. So it's going to be a fun camp. Things are going to get a little bit more heated up here once the pads come on. We're going to see a little bit more physicality. We'll see what happens if McDermott rolls out this rotation again of DeMar and then Edwards and then Cole Bishop playing alongside. Because the constant's Taylor Rapp, so they must be really sold that he is the one guy that's back there that can suit up, and he's the guy that they feel like, you know, he played a lot of snaps last year. So we'll see if he can progress in the system as well. So anything else on DeMar Hamlin before we move on to our next topic?
Not necessarily on DeMar Hamlin, but I noticed Taylor Rapp is the constant there that you spoke about, right? And it to me, it almost feels as if, to a lesser degree, it feels as if that Taylor Rapp is Aaron Williams after the Bills parted ways with Jarius Byrd. That's the vibe that I'm getting from
a good analogy. I like
with Taylor Rapp. He's the incumbent safety, starting safety for the Bills. Will that be prolonged throughout the entire season? We'll see. That depends on his play. But right now, because he's been in the system, because he's been with the team and he has that experience, he's the incumbent safety. So we'll see what happens there.
Let me ask you this. This is kind of out of nowhere, but is this season and how the safety play progresses throughout the year, do you think this is going to be – we're going to learn a lot about Sean McDermott, because we've all heard that he's like the safety whisperer and all that. And we all know how good Leslie Frazier was with DBs, not just safeties, but with DBs. Are we going to learn a lot about Sean McDermott? Because he had the best duo that this team has ever had, the franchise has ever had, in Poyer and Hyde. So he's got all new guys back there. Yes, DeMar Hamlin was here in some capacity. Taylor Rapp was here in some capacity, but now he's got a rookie that he has to develop. He's got Mike Edwards on a one-year contract. And he's got guys that haven't been here long term. So what's your thoughts? Is this going to be something where we're going to learn a lot about Sean McDermott and Bobby Babich and their development of safeties? What do you think?
Absolutely. This and we're going to learn a lot about both men, even though Sean McDermott's been here seven, eight seasons. We're going to learn even more about him this season. Why is that, right? The reason being is because of the offense. The offense is a transitioning one. We have a lot of new faces on the offensive side of the ball. We got, you know, the first year where Joe Brady gets to be the full-time offensive coordinator. And because of the offense and the transitional phase they're going through, I think it puts pressure on Sean McDermott being that defensive guru, because what everybody talks about with the Kansas City Chiefs, their offense came around, right? Their offense came around because of the defense. The defense allowed them that flexibility to eventually come around. And when the Kansas City Chiefs was second overall in defense and second in points per game on defense, that allowed the offense to make the mistakes because they knew they was always going to be in the game no matter what they did because of that defense. And I think the pressure is on Sean McDermott to mimic or mirror the same thing the Kansas City Chiefs last year, especially being a defensive guru that you're supposed to be. So it's going to be a ton of pressure on Sean McDermott.
Yeah, that's a great point. That really, really good point there. I hope that, you know, I'll say this, and I've said this like 17 times. There's going to be games where the defense is going to have to be near perfect because I feel like installing a new offense, you got two new parts on the offensive line. One guy's a guard that moved to center. You got the guard, left guard position battle. They say it's David Edwards, but if someone plays really well in camp and in preseason, I feel like there could be a really true competition. You got all these wide receivers. I think that there's going to be some growing pains, and I think that there's going to be times when the Bills are going to have to play lights out on defense. Is it week four or week five that we play Baltimore? I don't have the schedule in front of me, but that I could see that being a game where, yes, it's going to be a chess match with Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen, but you're going to have to stop Derrick Henry. You're going to have to stop Lamar Jackson. Your defense is going to have to be perfect because the Ravens have a really good defense. So there's going to be games like that, and I don't want to get too off schedule here, but there's going to be games like that where the defense is going to have to show up, and they're going to have to show up big time. And it's the nature of the beast with growing pains with a new system, a new offensive coordinator, new moving parts. So it's going to be fun. I think it's really going to be fun. You brought up Joe Brady, and he is one of our topics of the show. Before we talk about Joe Brady, if you're watching this on YouTube, please subscribe to our channel. We're trying to get as much engagement as possible heading into preseason and the regular season. Smash the like wherever you're watching this, Facebook, X, on YouTube. Drop comments in there. You guys, I love the chat that you guys have, not just with us, but within our little chat community there. So Joe Brady, when you hear, and we saw it a little bit last year, but when you hear anything from practice or from the 3 days of camp practice this week, the most used term was motion. And I kind of was joking when I said, there's probably still a guy in motion somewhere. Very successful offenses the last couple years, the San Francisco 49ers, the Miami Dolphins, there's pre-snap motion all over the place. And I think that with the Bills installing this new offense with these new players and these new wide receivers, I think that's going to be very beneficial to being able to mask what the offense is trying to do to create mismatches for the defense. I like the fact that Joe Brady came out and said, we don't have an X, Y, and a Z. We have guys that are going to line up wherever we decide to line them up. You know, if you want Keon Coleman to be the X, maybe next play he lines up in the slot. If you want Curtis Samuel to be the X, guess what? Next time he's lining up in the backfield. If you want Khalil Shakir to line up outside, next play he's lining up in the slot. And there's all that stuff, not to mention, you know, Dawson Knox lines up in the backfield sometimes. We saw that last year. James Cook can you know, go out wide and line up in the slot and do all that stuff. So does that get you excited about the potential for what this Bills offense can do? Because I think we're all kind of a little anxious about all these new moving parts and not having a dominant alpha number one receiver. Seeing what we saw this week and hearing what we heard this week and seeing Joe Brady talk, how do you feel about what we think so far of what Joe Brady's trying to install with the offense? Oh, you're muted.
You can't help but to like it, man. What Joe Brady is installing is, in my opinion, as a fan, exactly what I want to see. I want to see pre-snap motions. I want to see players, receivers in the backfield. I want to see running backs out wide. I want to see these motions to put these players in mismatch situations. And I think ultimately that is Joe Brady's goal. He's trying to get players in advantageous situations to get the ball in their hands so they can do things in space when they get it. And these pre-snap motions is ultimately, in my opinion, is going to help open these guys up on a football field. It's more about, for me personally, it's more about when the games are on and when the games are played and when you have to call specific plays. Can you call the correct play to take advantage of the defense called at the most crucial times? That's what I'm looking to see. I know it's really early right now, and they're still in the implementation phase in terms of what they want to do offensively and how they want to structure it. So thus far, I like what I'm seeing, but being that we've been seasoned to the Buffalo Bills for a while, and we've been to the playoffs for so long, and we've been in big time playoff games, I'm waiting for the moments to arise where he has to call good plays and is able to do so. Do I like what he's implementing thus far? Absolutely.
One big thing that stands out about this and what they're trying to do now, we haven't seen it in any live game action. So as of right now, it's just practice. Mm-hmm. But what I like that he's trying to do and possibly correct is something that I know you have and I know I have complained about, and a lot of Bills fans have complained about. If you're in an important situation, whether you're trying to come back by five in the fourth quarter, Diggs is always double covered, and they try to make Josh beat them with someone else. And mm-hmm. we have always said there is no one else. Mm-hmm. When they had Cole Beasley, fine, you can say Cole Beasley, but Gabe Davis wasn't that guy. And it just seems like what they're trying to put out there now, and what Brady's trying to do now, is if all the guys know all of the route tree in all of the positions, which are X, Y, and Z, or however you want to phrase it, you can have defenses focus all on one guy because the other guys, like Joe Brady said, everybody eats in this offense.
Mm-hmm. Everybody eats.
If you get into a situation where you have Curtis Samuel, Khalil Shakir, Dalton Kincaid, and mm-hmm. Keon Coleman breaking mm-hmm. the huddle, mm-hmm. they could line up wherever they want mm-hmm. because there's that flexibility because they're all learning that aspect of the offense. I like that. I like the fact that, you know, one game it might be Khalil Shakir. One game mm-hmm. it might be Dalton Kincaid. Mm-hmm. One game it might be Keon Coleman. It might be Curtis Samuel. So I feel like in theory, until we see it again, in theory, it sounds like it's something that should have been installed in this offense for Josh a while ago. Give him multiple targets because we all know that Josh, if we like to say it or not, he forced the ball to Diggs. He just did because that was his guy. That was the alpha male. That was the guy. If you needed a play, 9 times out of 10, he was going to get it. But it seemed like down the stretch, postseason, it wasn't there. And Josh had to rely on finding other people and doing other things. So if this is something that can cure that and they can all kind of grow together, I like the fact that there's going to be a lot of intermediate stuff, it seems like. That was a huge focus of a lot of the offense when they were in 7-on-7, when they were in 11-on-11 this week. It seemed like all the underneath stuff felt like it was important. It's like death by 1,000 cuts, like the New England Patriots for 15, 20 years. That's what they did. And, you know, Tom Brady always will tell you, my best receiver is the open receiver. So mm-hmm. if that philosophy can be installed here, I think that we're in for something. Now, they have to execute. The guys got to stay healthy, and they have to go out there and perform. But have you thought about that at all? Like, mm-hmm. we've talked so much, you and me, we've talked so much about Stephon Diggs is not doing anything, and nobody else is helping Josh. I don't know how many times we've said that in group chats. Do you feel like this can be some sort of a cure for that, especially down the stretch and crunch time?
So here's the thing with that, right? When I think about, or when we compare last year receiving core to this year receiving core, I think of Stephon Diggs, who is a great receiver, alpha receiver, our number one for the past 4 years, and he's our guy. But after him, it was it was a drop off between him and the next guy. And then after the next guy, it was another drop off between him and the next guy. Now, with this year's receiving core, there's not that alpha male receiver, but it's not a significant drop off between receiver two and receiver six, in my opinion. The drop off is not significant. So what I'm saying is that Mac Hollins is a better overall receiver than a Jake Kumerow. In my MVS, we want to talk about his hands and it being suspect at times. He's a better overall receiver than Trent Sherfield. So in my opinion, I believe that we have a bunch of reliable guys that can go out there and make the necessary plays. Probably not the alpha male, 1,500 yards, crazy dynamic type of catches, but we have a group of guys that can make the necessary play. And in my opinion, that's what Josh needs. When he throws the ball your way, catch the football, make the necessary play. If anything spectacular comes out of it, then that's great. But as long as we can consistently make the necessary plays, I think we'll be all right. And the way Joe Brady constructs his offense compared to the receivers we have and how we want to get open and get these guys the football, I think they will be capable of doing so without that alpha male number one wide receiver.
I'm excited about like the potential of not having to watch a game and sit there and say, okay, when is Diggs going to get involved? And then last year, you second half of the season, it was like, okay, is Diggs ever going to get involved? Like, but when Diggs and Josh were good and they were clicking, it seemed like the first half Diggs wouldn't get involved, and the second half, when the Bills needed a drive, it was like bing, bang, boom, there's three or four passes to Diggs. So I like the fact that there is going to be a more variety of players. Like you said, everybody's saying that this Bills roster at wide receiver is not good. But I can sit here and tell you that I think the overall, like you said, the overall roster of wide receiver position is better than it was last year. Because from top to bottom, I think you have more guys that are bunched up that are that two and three wide receiver or wide receiver four. And I think it's going to make for a great battle. And like McDermott always says, you know, iron sharpens iron. So we'll see. We'll see. But it's pretty exciting. So I want to talk about Matt Milano. So we talked about him last week, and you brought up a great point. Mm-hmm. All right, it was 2 weeks ago when we did our top 10 most important Bills players for the season, not named Josh Allen. You talked about, is he coming back as just Matt Milano, or is he coming back as all-pro, lights-out Matt Milano? And what are our expectations? Because there's been a lot of stuff circling through social media, especially on Twitter, of videos of him cutting and breaking towards the ball and doing some things like that. And there's mixed reactions as to how he looks and stuff like that. Have you seen any of the footage of him not doing the drills, but when they were doing some team activities where he was breaking on balls and doing stuff like that? Did you get to see any of that?
I did. I didn't see any, you know, significant laboring effects from the injury. I think that, you know, he had a fractured leg. He had a broken leg. That's a significant injury. Right. It's going to take some time before you start to become yourself again. He's now practicing, and he's practicing on a consistent basis, right? So what happens when you're practicing on a consistent basis when you haven't practiced in months? Same thing that happens that when a guy like myself, if I go to the gym for the first time and I work out and I'm doing chest and tries, the next day, guess what? I'm going to be sore as hell. So I think that is what's happening with Matt Milano. He's coming along. He's ramping up his activity, but he ain't play last year. So he's going to have some soreness. He's going to have some type of lingering effects because of that. And once he consistently practices and plays and gets up to speed, I think his body and how he will function and how he will cut and his mental stability in terms of being confident and trusting his leg will come to him as he continues to perform in practice.
Yeah, I think it's more than just the physical aspect. I think, like you touched on perfectly, it's the mental aspect. You know, we all talk about Von Miller last season. I think there was a ton of time when he was stuck in his head. And I don't think he was 100% last year for probably two-thirds of the season. I think he was still trying to get there. But your body will only do what your body's going to do. And I think watching him in some of these videos that people have even gone to a point of trying to slow it down in extra super slow-mo to watch how he's pushing off his right leg and, you know, he's not showing a burst and stuff like that. Of course, he's not going to be doing what he was doing last year when he's still trying to make sure that he doesn't overdo it. And the training staff is there and they're letting him go. So they obviously know that he's putting in 100% and they're going to let him try to figure things out on his own. I saw some really naive comment saying that this could be Von Miller 2.0 this season with Matt Milano. And I don't, mm-hmm. First off, I think the Bills are going to be a lot more cautious with Matt Milano. And I think if he's not right, they're not going to put him out there. Hence the reason why they signed all the linebackers that they signed and drafted one. And I think this is a completely different situation. Matt mm-hmm. Milano is a hell of a lot younger than Von Miller is. Mm-hmm. Matt Milano plays a completely different position, which is required to do a lot of different things than Von Miller is. Mm-hmm. Matt Milano doesn't have the frame that Von Miller has. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I believe the Bills learned from watching Von Miller go out there and just not be effective at all. He just wasn't himself. He wasn't bringing any value to the defensive line. Mm-hmm. And I'm not quite sure why it took as long as it did to get him off the field and inactivate him, you know, when they did. So what are your thoughts, expectations? Do you think Matt Milano, they kind of ease him in? You think he's ready week one? Do you think this is something, does he need to play in preseason? What's your thoughts?
Well, first of all, Matt Milano.
We're not doctors, by the way. There's some prefaces, but they
are not. Right, doctors. Right. First of all, Matt Milano, he suffered a significant injury, right? He fractured his leg, and that's a significant injury. Number two, okay, he's not Von Miller's age, but he's not a spring chicken anymore. He's 29, right? True. So now, if he was to get injured again, God forbid, then I would have concerns about future Matt Milano. Right now, in my opinion, comparing his injury to like a Von Miller is, I don't think it's the correct thing to do, right? Because number one, I think, you know, when you tear ligaments, I think that's a totally different ball game than a break. You know, when you tear ligaments, you have to get used to running and cutting and having stability on that ligament. And who knows if you're going to be the same again. His leg, Matt Milano, he just has to heal. It has to heal and heal properly. And then he has to ramp up the activity. And then I believe he will return to the elite form that we've been accustomed to seeing. And if God forbid he doesn't return to form, I don't think it's because of the injury. I think it's because of the age and him getting into those prime years of his career. So I'm not concerned with Matt Milano at all. I think as long as he's healthy, he's going to round into form. It's just going to take some time. And us as fans, we have to be patient because these football players are human beings and they have bodies like we do. So it's a combative sport. Give him time. He'll be fine.
Yeah. I think a lot of fans too, sometimes we got to take the emotional aspect out of it because we all enjoy Matt Milano. I mean, I think we're all Matt Milano enthusiasts over here. Mm-hmm. But again, I don't want to repeat. I'm not saying of the player and the type of injury and stuff like that. I'm talking about if he's not ready, fine. There's a few guys that I'm sure can step in, start the season. We mm-hmm. wouldn't like that. We don't want that. We want Matt Milano and Terrell Bernard out there, obviously. But if he's mm-hmm. not right, mm-hmm. I'm okay with them easing him into the season and letting some of these other guys. I mean, they got Morrow, they got Deion Jones. They got guys that can fill in, like you said a couple weeks ago. They got guys that can fill in if needed. Just let him get out there when he's right. Because, like you said, we don't need to have something because he wasn't ready 100%, re-injured, and then we're talking long-term issues then at that point. All right, let's talk about Keon Coleman. Keon Coleman is an interesting dude. I think we all know that, right? He's the cookies guy, and he's the yellow jacket guy, and you know, he's the guy that talks about Josh and Tiger Wishywood and all that stuff, right? But I've noticed this week he's been a different Keon Coleman. Have you noticed that? He's more serious. Like, not every time he's been talking to the press or interviewed or whatever, it's like business time, Keon. Like, he seems like he's motivated. He's in tune with what's going on. Mm-hmm. I think being in the locker room around some of the other guys for an extended period of time, plus they're in dorms now, so I don't know who he's rooming with. But what's your initial thoughts 3 days of Keon Coleman, seeing what he's been able to do? And I understand it's no pads, there's no contact, but you're still going man-on-man in a lot of these routes and a lot of these plays. They're still playing against actual defenders. So what's your thoughts so far this week from Keon Coleman? Initial reaction.
Impressive. I've been impressed with Keon Coleman. I've been impressed with his work ethic. I've been impressed with how he works and how seriously he takes his craft. And that, in my opinion, as long as he have those traits, because you can't teach those traits, right? As long as you have that work ethic in you, I think it's going to produce into the success of your ceiling, whatever your ceiling may be. And I think Keon Coleman this week, you know, we saw him during the draft and he was joking around, and it was kind of like being at work, right? You know, we know damn well we are a different person at work compared to when we clock out, right? So I think that is what we're seeing with Keon Coleman. Keon Coleman has clocked in. So since he's clocked in, we've seen a different personality, and he's ready to work. And I think that being in a Joe Brady's offense, I think that could benefit Keon Coleman and how he runs routes. And people was concerned with separation and him getting open. I think in Joe Brady's offense, he's going to be allowed to play within himself and showcase everything he does well in terms of body control, in terms of catching the ball in traffic, in terms of showing his displaying his size and physicality and being a bully out there against smaller opposing corners. So I think all these things are starting to round the form for Keon Coleman, and he's just going to have to continue to get adjusted to the speed of things, get adjusted to the speed of the NFL. We have pads coming on, so I think that's going to be another adjustment period for Keon in practice. The learning curve and the speed and thudding and hitting and taking on professional athletes. That's grown men. Keon Coleman is 22 years old. Now he's facing 26, 27, 30-year-old grown men. So I think he's getting adjusted to that faster than even I expected. So I've been impressed with what I've been seeing from Keon Coleman thus far, mentally and physically.
Hands too, man, for days. His hands, you can tell that we all know that Stephon Diggs had really good hands, right? I don't want to hear anybody chime in about the drop against Kansas City in the postseason. But our biggest knock on the next guy down was Gabe Davis and the drops, like the catching, the weird catch motion, everything for Keon seems fluid. Like, it just seems very natural. I watched some videos that were out there. Curtis Samuel has a very nice catch motion. It looks like it's natural to him. We obviously know Dalton Kincaid has exceptional hands. Khalil Shakir didn't really drop anything last year. So I think I'm excited to see if this offense is now. I understand, again, 3 days of training camp, I will temper my expectations, but we have guys, like you said, that all they need to do is catch the ball. All they need to do is what's asked of them is get a first down, get a little bit of yak, you know, just play through 100%, win every play. And that's what Keon Coleman said that I kind of liked. It was kind of under the radar quote. He said that he's trying to win. He just wants to win every possession. He wants to win every play. He wants to just win. And I like that mindset. And I think it's really something that can spread throughout the locker room. And look, you can say what you want about him being a second round draft pick instead of the first round draft pick. That kid's going to play with a chip on his shoulder, and the expectations for him, I think, are perfect. There isn't high expectations for him. There isn't. You know what I mean? And I think that he's going to be able to go out there and he's going to be able to surprise some people. So we're talking about Keon Coleman. We're going to talk about the wide receivers because it seemed like it was a lot going on for 3 days. There was a nice day by Keon Coleman. There was a nice day by Curtis Samuel. There was a nice day by Khalil Shakir. And Khalil Shakir was even interviewed and was talking about Curtis Samuel. He said, y'all are sleeping on Curtis Samuel. Mm-hmm. So what's your thoughts overall? I mean, I know it's practice, 3 days. It seems like they're all working, you know, in unison with Josh. What's your thoughts overall so far?
So I'm thinking about it. I know what I'm going to say, but I don't want to lose my rebuttal question I'm going to ask you because I have something I want to ask you. But answer your question first. I love what I'm seeing thus far, man. This is what I want to see. You don't know who's going to beat you on any given day. You don't know who's going to line up where because they are all capable of lining up anywhere. Keon Coleman, XYZ, Curtis Samuel, Mac Hollins. And I think Mac Hollins is going to be a bigger piece than us fans think he is. I think Mac Hollins, you know, Joe Brady spoke about him, raved about him going, you know, the barefoot assassin. And he's led other players to go barefoot during practice and things like that. I think he's going to be a key cog to what the Buffalo Bills are trying to do. And because of the potential up and down the lineup, because of the continuing moving pieces and moving parts, because of the offensive coordinator, Joe Brady, and what he wants to implement, we're going to always try to find a mismatch. And when we do that, we're going to try to exploit that mismatch, no matter if it's Kincaid or Shakir or Cook or Coleman. And I think that's where the everybody eats mantra comes from, because whoever's open, whoever has that mismatch, they're going to get the ball and we expect them to win, right? So I like what I'm seeing thus far, but I want to ask you a rebuttal question right quick, because I've seen interviews with Stephon Diggs explaining certain plays that happen, and he would say, well, I'm supposed to block this play, but you all pretend to block. You know, he always pretend to block, right? But we have guys now that actually like to block, and I think that is key in a Joe Brady system, that blocking component. So I want to ask, can that open up – do you think – receivers that is willing to block can open up so much more layers offensively? What are your thoughts on that? Especially maybe even in the run game.
I think that the guys that were brought in, because Keon Coleman can block, Curtis Samuel can block, Khalil Shakir can block, Dalton Kincaid still working on it, but he can block. Dawson Knox is becoming an elite blocker. These guys, and this wasn't formulated by coincidence. The Bills are going to run the ball. Mm-hmm. And Ray Davis had two really good days in a row. And a lot of people are sleeping on Ray Davis. I feel like this is going to be something where you're going to see a lot of stuff that, as Bills fans watching this offense under Brian Daboll, under Ken Dorsey, we are not going to be used to. There's going to be pre-snap motion. There's going to be stuff that's going to go outside. There's stuff that's going to go wide. There's going to be stuff that's going to go underneath. I feel like they're going to do everything they can. Joe Brady's going to do everything he can to try to get as many people involved on every play as possible. Whether it's just you're going in motion, you're the decoy, or you're going to come in motion and I'm going to give you a pitch, or you're going to line up in the backfield and you're going to split out wide. Like, I feel like there's going to be so much of that that we're going to be watching the offense and our head's going to be spinning. But I do think to your question, I feel like they're going to run the ball a lot. I really do. I feel like they're going to try to take the pressure off of Josh and only make him be what we know of Super Josh when it's absolutely necessary, when it's the fourth quarter and you need to break glass in case of emergency, let him loose. But other than that, they want to keep him healthy. They want to keep him upright. They want to give him a clean pocket. I mean, you're going to run 12 personnel a ton, and then you have a guy like Mac Hollins who can block. You got a guy like Keon Coleman who's a big body that can block. MVS is a big guy that can block.
Claypool.
What's that? Chase Claypool, another one. So I feel like they're trying to get more physical. And I feel like McDermott's teams, whether it's defense or offense, I know you've said it 100 times. They're always out physical. It seems like they're not the aggressor. They're the aggressee, and they're always being pushed around. Now, there's been games where they've come out and they're just, I feel like they're bullying teams, like the Commanders.
Cowboys.
Mm-hmm. Cowboys game. They just ran the ball down their throat. The Raiders game last year, they just said, try to stop us. Or even the Dolphins game, where they were just too much for the other teams to handle. And I feel like going back to even 2017, like teams were able to run the ball all over the Bills because the Bills defensive line in the second level was just not physical enough. Even having Tremaine Edmonds, a physical freak, and Matt Milano, the team just wasn't physical enough. So I think, again, back to your point, I feel like bringing in these big guys, and we know that Brandon Bean has tried to find big receivers. He's tried. He tried with Gabe Davis. He's tried with other guys. He likes the big guys. And now I think they have a roster full of wide receivers that are big guys. I mean, Shakir and Samuel aren't huge, but you have like the other ones we mentioned are big, and they're trying to be physical. I guess that's the only way to dumb it down and say it any other way that I can, is that they're just trying to make sure that they have guys that are going to be, they're going to be big, they're going to block, and they're going to be able to be universally interchanged as well. If Chase Claypool makes the roster, which I think he might, I think you're going to be able to take out a Keon Coleman and put in a Chase Claypool. You're going to be able to take out a Chase Claypool and put in a Mac Hollins, you know, and you're going to be able to have that physicality. So
for a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
If that answered your question.
I like it.
I do think that they're going to try to punch people in the face. And Ray Davis is nasty. Mm-hmm. And James Cook is the guy that can take it to the house and the speedster, and it's going to be a nice 1-2 punch. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this offense evolves from what we saw last year, because I really don't think down the stretch what we saw was sort of the dumbed down version, because I don't think Joe Brady had all the parts that he wanted. And I believe that he was a huge key to the acquisitions the Bills made, either via free agency or in the draft on the offensive side of the ball. I feel like Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott and Ken Dort or Joe Brady all sat together and were like, okay, what kind of offense are we trying to run here? Do we want to be more physical? Do we want to have big guys? Do we want to have speed? That's why MVS was brought in. He's speed. Chase Claypool, he's just a big guy. Mac Hollins. Everybody was probably thinking, oh, that's the bigger receiver that we're going to go get. We don't have anybody on roster and we're going to get Mac Hollins. Mac Hollins is a vibe. Like, I'm digging the dude. Like, I think he brings something in that locker room that is calming to everybody. Mm-hmm. Like, he's just – like, he doesn't give a shit about anything. Like, he goes out there with his ripped shirts. He's cutting his toenails sitting on the grass. Mm-hmm. But I feel like he's an upgraded version, like you said, over a Jake Kumerow. He's a guy that I guarantee in the red zone he's going to get some targets, and he's going to make some plays. Mm-hmm. So – I think the roster, we've all been concerned with the wide receiver room, but I think what they've done is there was a little bit of addition by subtraction, not naming names, but there was a little bit of addition by subtraction, and now there was more addition of guys that fit what Joe Brady wants to do with this offense. So
I like it a lot. I like it a lot.
All right, so let's continue talking about wide receivers, because MVS, who I think – I brought you to the dark side when I said that he's probably a roster lock. At that contract, he's a roster
mm-hmm.
lock. So the first couple days of camp weren't that great. Miscommunication between him and Josh, which is expected. It's been 2 days of training camp. 7-on-7 drills didn't look great. 11-on-11 when he was targeted, there was actually a couple interceptions thrown by Josh on Friday's practice. Is this something we should be concerned with, or you think they just need to iron out some wrinkles here?
Ah, man, it's so tough because MVS has been such an inconsistent player throughout the course of his career. So it's hard to say, in my opinion. And then I have this statement that is in my head that he said. Did you see the statement where he said he helped Patrick Mahomes win that MVP? He helped the quarterbacks win several MVPs. I thought he made some interesting comments and quotes throughout the week. But I'm hoping it is you know, getting to know each other process, right? We hope that, you know, it's miscommunication because of MVS now getting acquainted with Buffalo and getting acquainted with Josh Allen and the system and the structure and the plays and schematics and how everything works. And that's a lot right now. And hopefully that will improve the more chemistry they build. So right now I'm hoping it's a chemistry thing and they just have to work on that chemistry. And by the time week one roll around, they will be more in sync as a quarterback and receiver.
I agree with you. I don't buy too much into the stuff that happens in the end of July, unless mm-hmm. it's injury related or something like that. Mm-hmm. Because again, there's no pads. I think this week is going to tell us a lot. I think mm-hmm. this week, like you alluded to with Keon Coleman, like it's real now. Mm-hmm. Right. So I'm just hoping that everybody stays healthy and we get through this week. And everybody's there's 91 guys there again throughout the week. So, mm-hmm. all right. So we talked about Joe Brady's offense. We touched on Bobby Babbage a little bit. How do you feel about the offensive and defensive coordinators? Because we had Brian Daboll, who's been around for a while. And we had Leslie Frazier before last season. It seems like the youth movement includes the coaching staff. How do you feel about the energy from Bobby Babbage, the energy from Joe Brady? Do you think that is something that is they're fully grasping the youth movement and that includes the coaching staff? What's your thoughts on that?
I think it's infectious. I think players, especially today's players, this generation, I think they like a coach that is pumped up, that is upbeat. It's like a form of communication between young players and coaches. Our coach is in tune with the players. He's not just some old fart that's just coaching guys and acting like a principal. No, he's in tune with his guys. He want to know what they're doing, where they're at. He wants to celebrate their plays, celebrate their wins. And we see that on both sides of the ball. And me personally, I love it. I love it. This is what you want from your young coaches. You want your young coaches to bring that youth and bring that excitement. It's not just on players to bring that energy. It's on the coaching staff to bring that energy as well. Because in my opinion, and I've said this a couple of times, and I want to keep saying it, the players are a representation of the coaching staff. And if the coaching 100%. Staff is infectious and showing that energy and being upbeat and showing the attitude necessary to win and to get along and to build chemistry, it's going to trickle down to Josh Allen, to Ray Davis, to the receiver, to down to the 91st man on the roster. So thus far, I'm really liking the coaching staff and how upbeat they are. And I like the transition from older coaches, right? We had Leslie Frazier in the beginning. We had Rico Dennison in the beginning, where they had a lot of people probably even forgot Rico Dennison was an offensive coordinator for the Bills in 2017, right? So they transitioned Sean McDermott from older experienced coaches to younger, more energetic coaches. And I like that transition. Sean McDermott build up his experience as a head coach. And when he builds his experience as a head coach, now he gets to bring guys to come along from scouts and build them up to scout to positional coach to coordinator. So I'm loving the young coaches, the influx of young coaches in critical positions in offense and defensive coordinators between Babish and Joe Brady.
All right, one quick one. You got 10 seconds to answer. One word answer.
Mm-hmm.
Bobby Babish calls plays week one.
Nope. I think Sean McDermott's call plays.
Wow.
I know. And I agree with you. I agree with you, what you said like about a month ago. If there is any time that Bobby Babish should call plays, it should be now. But I just, for some reason, I'm not sure if Sean McDermott wants to give it up.
I don't know, because like I said when we started the show, like if you let him, if he's not calling plays,
mm-hmm.
right, McDermott's calling plays.
Mm-hmm.
He's calling plays all year. Because you can't just randomly throughout the season just relinquish it and say, okay, here you go, Bobby. It's now it's your turn in the middle of the season. Because mm-hmm. at that point, mm-hmm. now you're playing to make the postseason and you're playing to do all mm-hmm. this stuff. If Bobby Babich is calling plays and you get to, say, week 6 or 7 and we don't like where we're at defensively, McDermott can then say, okay, we're going to call plays together, or I'm taking over calling plays for the rest of the season. So there's not like a lapse. There's not, you know what I mean? Like,
does that, okay. So let's say Bobby Babish does call plays and week 6, week 7, he's struggling and Sean McDermott relinquished that title from him. Does that hurt Bobby Babish? Like, would we go back to him after that?
I think you would. I think he needs to, it's just like with the player, right? They're going to have their growing pains. I feel like Bobby Babich is going to have his growing pains. Was he a hell of a DBs coach, a safety coach? Yeah. Was he a hell of a linebackers coach? Yeah. But you gotta let him, you have to, he's a peacock, man. You gotta let him fly, right? Like you gotta let him experience it. But I only think that they would take it away from him if it was a situation where the Bills were 2-4 or 1-5, God forbid, and if something was just really wrong and they needed to right the ship like immediately. If they're 4-3 and the defense is top 15 and it's just been some tough games, because the schedule is hard. The schedule is tough. This entire schedule is rough.
It is. I
think you got to kind of see it out. We're in a transition year, right? I feel like I'm seeing all this crap online about, is Sean McDermott on the hot seat? No, he's not. He's not. Mm-hmm. I can tell you right now, he's not. Brandon Bean on the hot seat? No, he's not. Is this a big year for Brandon Bean? Absolutely. But neither of them are on the hot seat. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why. You just got to let it play out. I feel like you got to let, you gave the man the position. Like, if it's not this year, then is it going to be next year? When's he ready if he's not ready now? You know what I mean?
What grade would you give Sean McDermott, defensive coordinator, last year? What grade would you give him as a defensive coordinator calling plays for the Bills? Did you like how he called plays? Did you like how the defense played?
I'd give him a B plus, I guess. I'm not happy with how the game was called against the Chiefs in the divisional round. That okay. I wasn't happy about the game against the Eagles. I wasn't happy we got the game against the Broncos. Like, there's some games, yes, I could pick out. Overall, was I satisfied? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Do I want to see something new and something different and something fresh with the tutelage from Sean McDermott? Yes, because, you know, he's still the head coach, and if there's something he sees that he doesn't like, he has the ultimate veto power, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Same with the offense, same with special mm-hmm. teams. Like, I want McDermott to focus on the team overall game, in-game management. We all talk about his in-game management. We all want that to be addressed and corrected in certain aspects. You know, the field goal against the Broncos with too many men on the field. There's other things I can point out. I just I want Bobby Babich to be the defensive coordinator. I want him to call plays. I want the progression to continue, because if he's not calling plays, you're not going to give it to him anytime this season. He's just the guy at practice who's in charge, mm-hmm. checking in with the other positional coaches, right? Mm-hmm. So then is he ready next year? Like, does McDermott have to give him a test that says, you know, okay, what are the answers to these 15 questions? You know what I'm saying?
Right,
like,
right, right.
Like, when's he going to be ready? He's got to be ready. You mm-hmm. gave him the position. The guy has shown nothing but, you know, he's been here since McDermott's been here in mm-hmm. one facet or the other, whether it be the position coaches, now he's a defensive coordinator. He's shown loyalty towards McDermott, towards the team. You know, I think it's time to let him loose. Let's see what he's got. And like I said, I think it's easier to take it away from him than just to give it to him at a later date, because he might be in the back of his mind thinking, okay, now I've finally earned it. It's been, you know, another full season. I wasn't calling plays, but I was in charge of the defense. So I think you just got to let him have it. And like I said, a month ago, I think you're in a transition year. If this is the year, let him loose. Young guy, he's full of juice. Let him loose.
I like it. I'm interested to see what direction they take that. I can't wait till they finally announce who's going to be calling plays. They're going to wait till the day before week one, probably. Who knows? Yeah. They're going to wait. Oh, yeah. They're going to drag it out for sure.
100%. What? So you said that you want McDermott calling plays. So give me your reasoning on why that is. Because you asked me, now I'll put you on the spot. Why is that?
Overall, I think the Buffalo Bills did a solid job defensively, man. There's games you can have plays that you want back, but I think that's going to be every coordinator offensively or defensively where, you know, you can nitpick a little bit. But overall, I just liked the aggressive nature that the defense played with. And I don't think the defense played with that much aggressive nature, as much aggressiveness under Leslie Frazier. You know, Terrell Bernard was all over the field. He was getting sacks. He was forcing fumbles. He was tackles for loss. He was all over the field. And I believe he was all over the field partly because of the aggressive nature and the way Sean McDermott calls plays. And I don't want that to die, so to speak, right? Now, on the same token, I would love to see what Bobby Babich has, and maybe he is just as aggressive or maybe even more aggressive than a Sean McDermott. Who knows? But in my opinion, I just like overall what Sean McDermott did defensively, and I think he could be successful again this season. But again, who knows what may happen? Bobby Babich is a new coordinator. He's a young guy full of juice. He could be that superstar in waiting. He could be that next head coach in waiting for the Buffalo Bills. So we'll see what happens. But I like what Sean McDermott did last year as well.
I can't disagree with what you said. That's so tough, because there was a visible difference. There was absolutely, you could tell. I talked about it earlier about the physicality of the team. You could tell mm-hmm. that their team, Ed Oliver had his best season as a professional under Sean McDermott calling plays. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that's a coincidence, but you know, the seamless transition of Rasul Douglas coming over midseason, mm-hmm. he picked right up as soon as he was injected in the starting lineup. Mm-hmm. He picked right up where he left off in Green Bay. Like, he was making plays the first game he played. So it's going to be interesting to see how they slice and dice that and what direction they go in. Mm-hmm. All right. Before we get out of here, smash the ever loving like button. Mm-hmm. You guys are watching on YouTube. Please hit that subscribe button, hit the bell, so you know when all of our shows go live. We have shows every day here on the Built in Buffalo Network on YouTube, Facebook, and X. All right, Akeem.
Yes, sir.
Before we get out of here, we got hot takes. We're going to do this every show. We have to. Mm-hmm. Hot takes from the first 3 days of training camp that could bleed into the season. I'll let you go first. You're welcome.
So, hot takes, right? We spoke about DeMar Hamlin starting training camp off with the ones. I found that to be an interesting tidbit there. Are we bringing on Cole Bishop slowly? Taylor Rapp is the incumbent starter, and he's been that guy since day one of training camp. I'm thinking the Buffalo Bills, and again, I hope these guys progress well, and I hope that it is not an opportunity for the Bills they would have to fix in the future. But I really like the possibilities of the Buffalo Bills adding a future piece by the end of preseason. And I think that they're going to add that piece at the safety position. Now, Micah Hyde has spoke about possibly returning to the Buffalo Bills. He's either going to be Buffalo or nothing. I think if the Buffalo Bills really wanted Micah Hyde, he would be here by now. I think ultimately they want to see what they have. They want to see what Mike Edwards is, what Cole Bishop is, what Damar Hamlin can give the Buffalo Bills defense, and if they're satisfied. And if they're not, which I think they're going to see an opportunity there, I think they're going to go ahead and pluck a guy before week one against the Arizona Cardinals. Isaiah Simmons will be a Buffalo Bill before week one. Isaiah Simmons will be a Buffalo Bill before week one.
Why isn't he on a roster already?
Is it
money?
Mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling. It shouldn't be money.
How much would you give him? How much would you give Simmons right now? It's almost August, mind you. He's missed all of OTAs. He's missed minicamp. He's missed the first week of training camp. I mean, it doesn't matter. He's a veteran. I guess somebody's going to say in the chat that he's a veteran. It doesn't matter. But how much would you give him?
Let me look him up right quick. I just want to get his age. Isaiah Simmons 31, is,
I think.
Is he 31?
Actually,
he is. Isaiah Simmons is 26.
Really?
He's 20 freaking six, bro.
How the hell? I'm way
off. He played three years with Arizona, and they played last year with the Giants, correct?
Yeah.
Yep. He's 26 years old. I would give him a 3-year, $36 million deal right now. Right now.
Oh my gosh.
Right now, 26 years old. Now, obviously, I'm not saying it's going to happen, right? But if the Buffalo Bills have any struggles, or if they feel that they lack that depth because it's just Mike Edwards, Taylor Rapp, Cole Bishop, and Damar Hamlin, is that enough? I'm not sure personally right now. When I look at that group on paper, I'm not sure that's enough. Everybody's talking about adding a wide receiver. I believe the Buffalo Bills added a plethora of wide receivers so they don't have to add a wide receiver. Right. So I think the guy ultimately will be Isaiah Simmons. He'll be a Buffalo Bill by week one. That is my hot take.
I mean, I agree with you. I like that a lot. I like that a lot. I like giving you shit too when we're doing stuff like this. I'm just concerned about the money. Only because Brandon Bean typically likes to have some money for in season things. I just don't know if they can afford him. I'm concerned as to why he's not on a roster already. It's almost August.
And I'm looking right now. I thought he was up there in age as well, but I'm seeing it here. You probably can't see it. He's definitely 26 years old.
That's crazy. I thought crazy. He was in the league longer than that.
And it's like, if he's 26 years old, why the hell isn't he on a team?
Yeah, that's a really good point, because that could line up right with the youth movement still.
Right.
26. All right. My hot take.
What you got? What you got? I'm excited.
And this has nothing to do with what happened the last three days of camp.
Okay.
I started to get into this mindset when we did our 10 most important Buffalo Bills, not named Josh Allen, for 2024. Keon Coleman is going to lead this team in receiving touchdowns. Mm-hmm. And it might be double digits.
Oh.
I'm telling you right now.
If he get double, we're talking rookie of the year kind of considerations. If it's that,
and I know it's practice, and it's practicing against air, and it's whatever. Mm-hmm. He beat every cornerback that is on the team in the end zone this week in 3 days. That catch he made on the sideline, I don't care if it's practice or not, with somebody pulling on his jersey, mm-hmm. and he contorted his body and made that catch. Nobody thought he was capable of doing that. They just said, oh, he's tall and he can jump high, and mm-hmm. you know. He's a big body. We'll see. I think he's going to lead this team in touchdowns, and he's going to lead this team in red zone targets. Everybody talks about Dalton Kincaid. He's still going to get his. He's still going to get his target share. I feel like Kincaid will go over 100 receptions. I think that's child's play for him. That's one more or two more targets a game for him than he had last year. I just feel like I started the show talking about people are sleeping on Keon Coleman just because he's not Marvin Harrison Jr. or Roma Dunez. He's a guy, if you watch the tape at Florida State, he looked like a man playing amongst boys. Like it a lot of the stuff he did wasn't even fair. And he had piss poor quarterback play. He now has Josh Allen, who can put the ball wherever he wants to. So I feel strongly about how he's going to contribute in this offense.
So quick correction. Thank you, Roy Collins. Quick correction. Justin Simmons is 31. That is correct.
That's what I was thinking of.
I said Isaiah Simmons. So that it messed me up. It messed me up. Justin Isaiah Simmons is indeed 31. So correction on that.
So I was right.
Yes, you was correct. We don't have the stat correction guy like ESPN has. So we got to make our own.
Not yet.
Own.
We will.
Not yet.
We'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get there. So we'll make our own correction. So yes, he is 31, but still, I still would want him on the team 2 years, $20 million. I'll still pay him $10 million per.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like Isaiah Simmons a lot. I like Isaiah Simmons a lot. Now, if our safety group is doing well, then fantastic. You know, save that money, save that 10 plus million we have, let it roll over, and we'll have more money to spend to spurge on in 2025. So we'll see what happens.
You want to know where I think some money's going? Edge.
Oh. To an existing player or to an incoming player?
Incoming. In a couple weeks, I bet there will be an edge defender signed. I don't feel that they feel comfortable. Yes, they paid AJ Epinesa, and yes, they gave Greg Rousseau his fifth year option. Mm-hmm. But after that, you got a bunch of guys that are cast offs from other teams, and you got Von Miller.
Mm-hmm.
Does that group scare anybody? Because if it was me, and I was Brandon Bean, and I look at, like you just alluded to, our safety room and how it's constructed right now. If they don't do anything there, you need to get to the quarterback. You absolutely cannot rely on Ed Oliver and Daquan Jones to lead this team in sacks.
Mm-hmm.
You have to – I mean, unless they're expecting and they are seeing what we're not seeing at practice and throughout this whole offseason, that Greg Rousseau is going to take this massive next leap. Mm-hmm. In year four, I don't see it. And then AJ Epinesa, I think we know who he is. He's not an every down edge defender. He's just not. He's a guy that you bring in when you need to make a few plays on third down, and he's a 6.5 to 8 sack guy. So I think they need to bring in an edge defender. I honestly do. And there's some guys out there like Yannick Ngakoue is out there. I think he could be a 1 year rental. If you're just trying to make sure that your guy's on the back end, and plus you're also worrying about Matt Milano's health, and the defensive line is going to cater to a lot of what the linebackers are going to do. They're going to set up the linebackers to be successful. So, and the cornerbacks and the safeties, it's all, you've got to get to the quarterback. Mm-hmm. We have too many games on this schedule where we have elite quarterbacks that are going to pick us apart if we can't get to them. Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, Patrick Mahomes, if you want to throw Tua in there. I mean, there's a lot of quarterbacks that will make you pay if you give them time. Mm-hmm. So we have to get to the quarterback.
You know what? I like that a lot. Rebuttal to that is, what about your feelings towards the young draft pick that had 16 sacks last season at Troy and Javon Solomon? I know he's a little he's undersized, 6 foot, about 250.
Here's the thing, though. When we do roster construction, and we will do a 53-man roster show, me and Akeem will do that. It's too early. I don't like doing it this early. We'll do it more towards cut day. It's going to be hard for him to make the roster.
We talked a couple weeks ago. We talked about the linebacker room. What's going to happen with Matt Milano? Is he going to be healthy to start week one? Because you got all of the veterans there. How many safeties are they going to keep? How many corners are they going to keep? How many offensive linemen are they going to keep? Are they going to keep 10, 11 offensive linemen? How many defensive linemen are they going to keep? He's a rookie, and I feel like he might be a practice squad candidate. How many wide receivers are we going to keep? You know, there's a lot that goes into – he's not just battling against other guys on the defensive line and edge defenders. He's battling against guys that can play special teams, guys that might return kicks, you know, like Andy Isabella or KJ Hamler. He's fighting against all of those guys. So it's going to be hard. I would like to see it because I think he's a freak. I think that when he was drafted, I think, you know, the first couple of people that comment in our group chat is, holy shit, watch the tape. The guy's insane. And I love the pick. I just don't know who he replaces on the roster. Like, he's going up against like Cam Lewis. He's going up against like guys that are just, they do one thing well. They may not at their actual position, but they play special teams. You know, like, can Chase Claypool make the roster because all of a sudden now he can play special teams? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like stuff like that, like where they're going to have to figure out if they're going to, how many defensive linemen are they going to keep? So trench warfare is always important, I believe, to Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott. They're always going to keep as many on the offensive and defensive line as possible. Mm-hmm. But this roster is kind of, it's all over the place with the depth at linebacker wasn't by accident. I don't think. I think they're going to keep a bunch of linebackers because they don't want what happened last year in the postseason to happen. You want to have an emergency backup plan. You know, if you're heading into the postseason and one of these guys, one of your starters is out, and then one of your other starters is out, then you have guys that are on the roster right now currently that have started multiple seasons worth of games. So what's your thoughts on it?
I like him a lot, man. I like him a lot. I think he can be a diamond in the rough kind of guy. I would love to stash him on the practice squad and see if he could, you know, further develop his game. I would hate for him to get plucked by anybody. The Giants always scare me. It seems like they're kind of looking at our guys on the practice squad to see who they can pluck. But at the end of the day, he's a guy that I want to see him within the Buffalo Bills facility for at least a year or two to see how he develops. I'm not sure if he's going to be ready immediately, if his pass rushing abilities can translate over to the NFL so quickly. We're going to see sooner rather than later. But I think he is definitely a big mold of clay that we can develop and round to some type of player, whether that be a starter in the future or just a rotational piece. I think he could add value to the Bills' defensive line.
Roy Collins says, Javon Sullivan was drafted to the defensive end room. Who you cut if you sign another defensive end? Casey Tuhill?
I like Casey, you know. I like Casey a little bit.
But you can get Yannick Ngakoue?
Yeah.
I'm just, if we're just talking to answer the question, if we're just talking player for player.
Right.
Yannick Ngakoue can come in. He's been proven to just be one of these free agent acquisitions who could come in and give you 8 to 10 sacks. He can be, because that's what Von Miller is going to be. He's just going to be that third down quarterback sacking merchant. I feel like that's all he needs to be. Let him play 15 snaps, 20 snaps a game. That's it. Go in on third down, go get the quarterback. We don't need you to stop the run. And then Monster says, shout out to Monster, by the way. Monster says, you said coach is not on the hot seat. What would have to happen this year to put his job in jeopardy? They'd have to go 3-14, and it would just have to look rough all the way through. Other than that, I think if they go 9-8, 8-9, I think he's still here. Look what they just did. They turned over half the roster, literally half the roster from last year. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you got to cut them some slack. They got rid of how many captains? You know, you're going to have all these first-time captains other than, what, Josh Allen and Deion Dawkins, I believe. So you have to be just abysmal, I believe, for them to be even considered to be on the hot seat. What do you think, Akeem?
Yeah, I think it would have to be a very disappointing season to put them on the hot seat where, You know, Joe Brady is struggling and he's not the guy and he ends up getting fired. And now we're having conversations about can Sean McDermott find the right defense, the offensive coordinator to hoist the Lombardi Trophy. And then Josh Allen is going to be with his fourth coordinator in this amount of years. So I think stuff like that, it'll have to be a spiral effect of negativity for Sean McDermott to be in that hot seat. I don't think he would get fired no matter what happens this season.
I agree with you 100%. Hey, Rich, anything else you want to talk about? Anything on your mind tonight, man?
It's been a busy week. Yeah, it has. We're getting back in the swing of things, right? We're getting back into the flow of things. Buffalo Bills camp is on its way at John Fisher, and you know we're just excited to see the product on the football field and see what this product can become. I believe in years past, you know, we haven't won a Super Bowl, but we knew the type of team we had. We knew we was going to be good. We knew we had the capabilities. This year is a lot of, I'm very confident, but it is a lot of smoke and mirrors. Can we be successful on offense? Can we be successful on defense? Can these players be successful under this scheme? So it's, in my opinion, a real exciting time for the Buffalo Bills. And I think Sean McDermott, Joe Brady, Brandon Bean, and that entire Buffalo Bills coaching staff is going to be up to the challenge. So we'll see how camp progresses and how these players in transition, offensively and defensively, will progress at One Bills Drive. So it's been a great show, DM3. Next week we got more to talk about. A lot of more things are going to happen over the course of this week, and we're going to have more topics next week for us and everybody in the comment section to discuss.
I want to put this comment up real quick. I think McDermott will be here when they cut the ribbon to open the new stadium. Oh, I think beyond that, if I'm being honest with you, you touched on something, Akeem, right there that I don't think a lot of people are talking about. They've probably thought it, but not really talked about it. So we were so used to during the drought, and I hate bringing up the drought because it seems like it was forever ago now, which is a good thing. During the drought, we were so used to being disappointed by this team. We were so used to starting out hot and then, you know, just fizzling out halfway through the season. And then we got kind of spoiled, right? We had some growing pains. Josh's rookie year in 2018, we had some growing pains, but we kind of expected it. And then since then, they've kind of been on this playoff run, and especially the last 4 years, winning the AFC East. Now it's kind of like it's flipped. Like when Josh first got here, we didn't know what to expect, right? Even through 2019, I think we were kind of still, we thought he was the guy, but he was still growing, right? And then 2020, he took off. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, we know we have Josh Allen, and then there's all everything else, right? Mm-hmm. We have a lot of good players at a lot of key important positions, and it's going to take a lot of execution, a lot of coaching. That's why I phrased this question to Akeem earlier. I think this season is going to tell us a lot about Sean McDermott. Is he going to let Bobby Babbage call plays? Mm-hmm. Are the safeties going to be good enough to keep this defense a top five defense like they've been for the last 7 years since McDermott's been here? What's the offense going to look like? Can Joe Brady pick up where he left off last season? So I think there's a lot of questions. I will say this, though, and I've said this like 10 times over the course of the last couple months, is we just need to be patient with this team. I know it's hard because our expectations for the last 5 years have been through the roof. I think we just need to be patient. There's a lot of guys that aren't in that building that played a lot of meaningful snaps for the Bills. So we're going to have to let these guys that they acquired, guys that they drafted, the youth movement, the young coaches, let them do their thing and let them get into a groove and let the season progress before we, you know, get upset. They could come out barn burner. They could be 6-0. We could be like, this is the greatest team we've ever seen. But they could also start out slow and then pick it up like they did last year. So hopefully not, but it could happen. So
any concerns about Joe Brady pulling a Ken Dorsey? Elaborate. We know Ken Dorsey. He took over a couple of years ago, and he looked good too. Right. And then he looked good in the beginning of the season, and then it was just a Now that Joe Brady is in a similar situation. Do you have any concerns that he may go through the same thing when teams have his scheme on film, or you have no concerns with that whatsoever?
I don't think that the offense that we're going to get is the offense that we saw last year. I think that was the vanilla dumbed down version, because I think now he's got different pieces that he wants to put into his puzzle. I think last year, yes, you had Diggs. You had an alpha receiver. Yes, you had Kincaid, but he was a rookie. Yes, you still have the unicorn that is Josh Allen. But I think this year he's got, since the season ended in January, to start dialing up plays, start putting people in the position to be successful. Like I said, I firmly believe he had a hand in some of these acquisitions, whether it was the draft or free agency that were made, based off of what he wants to do. I firmly believe Ray Davis is because of Joe Brady. I firmly believe that they're going to run two back sets. I feel like it's something that we have not seen. There's going to be two backs in the backfield this year, and it's going to be crazy. It's going to blow all of our minds. They're going to run 12 personnel. They're going to be a power run team in games, and we're going to be like, what the hell's going on? So there should be a little cause for pause, I guess, you know, pump the brakes on all of it. But there's just a different vibe about Joe Brady that there wasn't with Ken Dorsey. I don't know. I never felt like the endorsement from Josh Allen for Ken Dorsey was overly genuine. I'm not saying he didn't like Ken Dorsey. They didn't get along and they weren't a good team at one point together, the duo. I just feel like there's different vibes with Joe Brady. I just feel like he's on a different level with Josh Allen. And I think he's a more creative mind. Look what he did with Carolina in 2020. If anybody wants to go back and look at what a guy can do with a lot less than what he has now with the Bills, go look at the 2020 stats for the Carolina Panthers. Mm-hmm. It was insane, the amount of players and the quarterback play that he had to get the production that he got. And then he was fired as the scapegoat of that team, which is ridiculous. I'm confident. I'm very confident in him. I like his swagger. I like his persona. I like the fact that he will openly admit that this is Josh Allen's offense, where we never got that from Ken Dorsey. And I think that's bleeding into Josh Allen. I think a lot of this, we lost all these leaders, and you're seeing Josh Allen be vocal in practice. And I don't know if this is residual from Stephon Diggs not being there. And Josh Allen felt like he just needed to be the quarterback one that led the offense. But now Josh Allen's out there being a vocal leader. He's the veteran on this offense. Mm-hmm. And I think some of that comes from having somebody who trusts you to run the offense, and Joe Brady trusting you to make this all work, all this transition they did. I feel like Joe Brady trusts Josh Allen to make his mind, his plays, and what his vision make it work. And that's why that gives me confidence.
I like it a lot. I like it a lot.
In a roundabout way, I know I took a while to get there.
No. I like it a lot. He has a swag. He has a certain swagger about himself that can be infectious. And I like what he's done. He gave us what we didn't have with Ken Dorsey. I felt with him, we was just calling plays. And if they were successful, great. If they wasn't successful, they wasn't successful. But at the end of the day, he was calling plays. With Joe Brady, I feel the Buffalo Bills offense have an identity. I feel that they understand what they want to do, how they want to do it, how they want to get there. Ken Dorsey was like, okay, we know we're going to have to get there. Let me just call these plays and figure out how. So I really like the direction that we have with a Joe Brady at offensive coordinator. And I just hope he can continue to ascend as a offensive play caller for the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, I think Ken Dorsey, and I don't want to keep beating a dead horse here, I think Ken Dorsey relied on letting Josh just be Josh too much, where you saw when Joe Brady took over, if you look game per game, there was times when you can tell it was break glass in case of emergency, like the Eagles game. You could tell that was
okay, mm-hmm. let's just go do what we have to do. This is a really good team. I mm-hmm. think at the time the Eagles were still the number one seed in the NFC before mm-hmm. they kind of fell off. Mm-hmm. And then there was times the Dallas game, which everybody always alludes to, where he just let the run game just do what it needed to do. And mm-hmm. then there was also times the Pittsburgh game in the playoffs where he's like, Josh, just go win us a game. We got to mm-hmm. make it to the next round. Because there was games when Josh didn't hardly run at all. And there was games mm-hmm. when he was very pocket heavy, you know, alternating with the run. So I feel like Joe Brady understands how to get Josh Allen involved in each particular game setting, if that makes sense. Like, when do we need to use Josh as a mobile quarterback? When do we need to try to find mismatches in the secondary so where Josh can just figure out, you know, what kind of defense he's seen and stuff like that. So that's why I'm extremely confident in Joe Brady. I think he's in the head of Josh Allen, and I think that the trust factor is huge there.
And another example, and then, you know, we could cut it loose. Another example of the players being a representation of coaches is Josh Allen, right? Last year, Ken Dorsey got fired. The very first game against the Jets, the Buffalo Bills scored a couple touchdowns. The first thing Josh Allen said was what? I feel like I'm freaking back. He didn't use that F word, but he said the other F word. I feel like I'm back. And the reason he felt like he was back is because of the play calling and the style of scheme and offense he was playing at that time, where he felt he was finally a part of and he can be himself. So that tidbit alone is like, okay, Joe Brady is in tune with his offense and in tune with his quarterback, Josh Allen.
Yeah, and there was even a part earlier in the season when the Bills' offense was struggling where – at a press conference, he was asked about the play calling, and Josh Allen said, we're just running the plays that are being called in. So that was kind of a shot right there where it didn't even seem like he was, you know, in tune and enjoyed, I guess, for lack of better words. He was not a fan of the plays that were being called. So I don't know. We'll see. It's going to be interesting. We're going to be here for every step of the way. We hope you guys join us on all of our shows on the Built in Buffalo Network. Mm-hmm. Hey, Rich, you want to take us out of here, man?
Hey, Rich, Akeem Richens, that handsome guy over there is Dave Myers, DM3, the man, the owner, co-founder of Built in Buffalo. We have shows on every day of the week except for Tuesday, but on Tuesday nights, please tune in on X to our Spaces broadcast to be myself and a lot of other Built in Buffalo members chatting up and chiming in about specific topics throughout the week, whatever we want to discuss and whatever our fans want to discuss. We definitely chime in and have some excellent dialogue in our X spaces. So please tune into that this coming Tuesday. I believe it's going to be at 9 o'clock, and keep in tune with everybody that is doing a show on Built in Buffalo Monday through Sunday. Myself, DM3, Built in Buffalo, the Founders Pod. We will see you next week.
Go Bills.
Go Bills.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.